At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's right. Bear down, Bears fans. It's time for another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast, Bears Banter, powered by Second City Gridiron. Bill Zimmerman with you. And we are back here. Another little brief hiatus. Been out of town. Been a little wild and crazy in the personal life here. But excited to get back to do a podcast with you. Dan Durkin, the newest member of the Windy City Gridiron team, is going to be by here in a little bit. Dan, of course, joining the team. He's going to provide that good X's and O's stuff that Robert Schmitz once provided here for this fine website. But Dan's going to be aboard to handle that. I'm really looking forward to getting his insight on the website. He's going to be great. So at DJ Durkin. If you don't follow Dan, I'm guessing most of you do, but give him a follow and you'll be able to get all his great content. So looking forward to talking with Dan, but let's talk a little bit about the preseason and training camp so far, Bears fans. And look, as far as I'm concerned, everything other than some injuries here and some availability, and we'll get into it, everything is going really well in training camp right now. I think you should be pleased with the defensive line. I think they're playing a bit over their heads. I still have concerns about the defensive line, but they're performing pretty darn well here in practices, and a couple pieces look pretty damn good in preseason games. I know it's tough to get a read if it's not happening in the first quarter against the ones, you know, exactly how much of it is the defensive player, how much is it the third or fourth string offensive lineman they're going against. But like Austin Booker, you love what you've seen from Austin Booker so far. He is looking like he is going to be an impact player, at a minimum going to be able to come in on third downs and hopefully provide a little bit of a pass rush. So you really like seeing it there. Dominic Robinson, look, he had a good game against Buffalo. I am not buying any Dom Rob hype until I see him start doing it consistently in the regular season. I think Dominique Robinson, other than that good first game he had against the San Francisco 49ers in the rain, I think has been non-existent. I think he has been a negative player every game basically since. So I'm very down on him, and it's going to take more than him, you know, bulking up and having one good preseason game before I'm willing to buy any Dom Rob hype. But, you know, the defense is looking solid. But let's not bury the lead. Let's talk about Caleb Williams. Some of the things he's already shown in practice and in the Buffalo game. Obviously, the throw to Cole Kmet, the little, you know, dump off to Swift. That's the type of things that we saw Caleb Williams do at USC. But we also saw him being able to operate in structure. We saw him talking about scheme and what to do in these particular situations. Even on Hard Knocks, we've seen some of it. So we're seeing a quarterback that does seem to have more of an ability to process at a quicker speed than the last two picks the Bears have had in terms of swinging for quarterbacks with Trubisky and Fields. That's all very positive, because we've seen a lot of positives from Mitch and Justin over the years, but their downfall really, I mean, a little different, you know, a little pre-snap for one, a little post-snap for the other, but basically the same thing about processing is what it came down to for both of them as to why they failed as Bears quarterbacks. We don't need to get into it too much. We're moving on, and what Caleb Williams is doing right now is excellent. He is a rookie quarterback. He is going to throw some interceptions. He is going to have some problems, but he is really developing well. He's showing the ability to play, you know, off book, so to speak, and do some creative things. But of course, is showing the ability to play in structure, which is what one of the knocks was on him, that he couldn't play in structure. And more we're seeing here, it wasn't so much that he couldn't in terms of his ability, it was that he couldn't in terms of what the structure was and what the talent was around him that really, really played into it. So, you know, in terms of some interesting things here, I'm going to get to the offensive line here in a second. But, I mean, hey, let's talk about this issue here with running back and receiver. I'm really curious how this is all going to play out here. Like, if you look at receiver and you look at running back and you say they're keeping 10. Now, they may not. They could keep more. And forget Kari Blasingame. If they keep Blasingame, that's different. I'm talking about actual tailbacks and wide receivers. If you say they're keeping 10, which traditionally is 6 receivers and 4 running backs, that's a little heavy. Basically, when you're trying to make a 53-man roster prediction, you put the 3 special teamers aside, the kicker, the punter, and the long snapper, you got 50. Then you got 25 on offense, you got 25 on defense. That's usually how this works. Then you look at the 25 on offense. I believe they're going to keep 3 quarterbacks again. They did that last year to take advantage of the new rule. Basically gives you 1 additional active player on Sundays. So having a 3rd quarterback, in essence, doesn't hurt you. So if you're saying they're going to keep 25 on offense and they keep 3 quarterbacks, you're down to 22. I think there's a good chance they're going to keep Kari Blasingame because of, I don't know if the tight ends that they have on this roster are good enough to do some of the backfield stuff that Shane Waldron likes to do. When I say good enough, I don't mean good enough in terms of being tight ends. I mean good enough in the backfield, that kind of style and skill. Like, I don't think Cole Kmet's going to do what Shane Waldron would want that player to do. I think Kmet needs to be more up at the line of scrimmage. We'll see. Waldron could prove me wrong. But basically, if we're going to sit there and say, all right, they're going to keep the 3 quarterbacks, they're going to keep Blasingame, that gets you 21 open spots. You go to tight end, they're going to keep 3 there at a minimum. Maybe a 4th, but if they keep Blasingame, maybe they just go with 3. That gets you down to 18. Almost certainly they would keep 9 offensive linemen. And if they keep 9 offensive linemen, then that only gives you 9 spots at running back and wide receiver. Maybe they can keep 8 offensive linemen, because if you break down the offensive line with the idea of maybe that Karan Amagaji ends up on IR to start or on PUP because he hasn't even ramped up yet and it's mid-August. If something like that happens, you know, when you have 9 offensive linemen, you usually only have 8 active on game days. Maybe they only go with 8 offensive linemen and all 8 are active on game days. Because if you go through the offensive line, obviously Braxton and Darnell are going to be it. Bates and Shelton are going to be it. Tevin is going to be it. Nate Davis is going to be it. That's 6. You got 2 spots left there. I think Matt Pryor is basically a virtual lock with his versatility. And right now, Larry Borum is a versatile lock because they need a swing tackle. So a virtual lock. So you've got those 8 there. Ja'Tyree Carter, I think, is perfectly safe to go over to the practice squad. I don't think anyone's going to scoop him up. So if Amagaji is active, then Amagaji is going to have to be 9, and then there's only 9 spots left. But if Amagaji can move to the IR, then the Bears can keep 10. So let's play this game out. Let's talk about 10 skill position players the Bears can keep at wide receiver and running back. You got the 3 big receivers, and you got Tyler Scott. That's 4. That gives you 6 spots left. DeAndre Swift and Roschon Johnson, that gives you 4 spots left. I am not putting Khalil Herbert in the lock spot. Although Khalil Herbert is a better runner than basically anyone else on this Bears team, Khalil Herbert also is very limited in the passing game, and Shade Waldron does not like to have predictive personnel groupings in terms of knowing if it's going to be a run or a pass. And Khalil Herbert kind of does that. Now, maybe he's going to make an exception. This is Herbert's last year under contract, and they say, all right, let's hold on to him. But let's look at the contenders here in these last 4 remaining spots. At receiver, you've got Dante Pettis, you've got Velus Jones, you've got DeAndre Carter. Let's throw in Colin Johnson. You've got those 4 there. Then you've got Travis Homer makes 5, Zach Wheeler makes 6, and Khalil Herbert makes 7. All right, so you've got 7 spots, 7 people vying for 4 spots on the offense. Let's take a look at this a little bit further. Dante Pettis you know, especially with Rome Odunze returning punts here, and it looks like maybe Odunze might settle into that role as a rookie. Let's assume Pettis is off this team. DeAndre Carter, could he be off this team? I mean, he does have, you know, a certain set of skills. Maybe he's worth keeping. I think Velus Jones is probably safe. He's showing a little bit at running back there. Maybe he's got a new life as kind of a different kind of player. But Velus, you gotta have to be on kick returns. You gotta hold on to the football. We can't have you muffing kicks back there, my buddy. So Velus Jones, he's definitely got some things to clean up, but I have a hard time thinking Ryan Poles quits him after just two seasons. I do think Velus is going to make it. And then with the running backs, Herbert should make it, but do they try and trade him or something because of the fact that maybe Jones is going to play more in the backfield? Zach Wheeler has shown some ability. And Travis Homer doesn't play much offense, but is a great special teams player. And maybe Shane Waldron used him in the Seattle offense a few years ago as a pass blocker and as a pass catcher. So maybe Shane Waldron wants to keep him around. So you've got a situation here. Like I said, we've cut Dante Pettis. We still have two spots left. I think Zach Wheeler probably goes to the practice squad. I think he's probably safe on the practice squad. Certainly not a guarantee, but I think maybe you start there. And then it comes down to, do you want Travis Homer on this team? Or do you have enough special teams talent where you can let him go? Do you want Khalil Herbert on this team? Or do you think Velus is going to give you enough where you trade Herbert, DeAndre Carter? You've Colin Johnson. Can he play special teams? You've got a lot of questions in terms of what that last spot on offense is going to be, especially considering a guy like Colin Johnson, probably safe getting over to the practice squad. So be curious kind of what they do there at the tail end of that offensive unit. On defense, you got to love the secondary. The linebacking group is strong. But up front, I still got a lot of questions. I love what we've seen from Austin Booker. I do think, you know, Matt Eberflus, there was some stuff going around on Twitter about, you know, better to have two edges than one, and that's what we're trying to do kind of thing. And then he kind of stumbled, and did Matt Eberflus slip up and say something that the Bears were trying to do? And maybe what the Bears were trying to do was Matthew Judon. I am confident in saying the Bears poked around on Judon. I do think the Bears made some kind of an offer to for Judon. Maybe they were willing to pay him some too. But of course, the Falcons end up giving a third-round pick. A third-round pick, pretty heavy for a team that is going to have some sort of tampering punishment in next year's draft. A third-round pick going for Matthew Judon, well, who is 32 years old now, coming off an injury, and you're just not sure exactly how productive he is going to be. But the Falcons and again, this is where the Falcons are weird. Win now team with Kirk Cousins, but they spend their eighth overall pick on Michael Penix, not a pass rusher. Then they're in desperate need of a pass rusher, so they give up a third round pick for a 32-year-old pass rusher that may or may not work out. So the Falcons kind of created this own pickle for themselves. If they did want Penix, they could have traded down. Maybe they could have taken Latu. I know, you know, Dallas Turner was a guy a lot of people thought they would end up going for. So the Falcons probably think they've addressed the pass rusher they needed to with a third-round pick instead of a top-10 pick, got their quarterback of the future. I'm sure they're patting themselves on the back. But I think a lot of people, myself included, are looking at that process a little cross-eyed and wondering exactly what they thought they were accomplishing there. So it's going to be interesting. You know, Yannick Ngakoue, I know the Bears have talked to him a little bit about potentially coming aboard. Whether that materializes, who knows? Ngakoue was not very good last year. Does Ngakoue, you know, if Austin Booker is showing some skills to get after the passer, do they need an Ngakoue? You know, you can't rely on Booker. There's just not a lot of depth there. Like I said, I don't trust Dominic Robinson. Jervon Dexter desperately needs to take a big step forward for this interior of this defensive line. You know Billings is solid. You know when DeMarcus Walker bumps inside, he's solid. But other than that, there is just not a lot of depth there. I don't trust Zach Pickens as well. So let me wrap up with Hard Knocks. I don't want to do spoilers in case people haven't watched the second episode or even the first episode. But look, I like this Hard Knocks. I like that the Chicago Bears are involved. Whether I was doing content creation and covering the Bears or not, I would still be watching Hard Knocks. I never watch Hard Knocks. So I watched Hard Knocks, you know, years and years ago for a couple seasons. Didn't really think I was getting much out of it. I just stopped watching it. Now the Giants you know, the offseason with the Giants. That's a lot of information. That's pretty fascinating. I would never want the Bears on that. That you get a lot of information about how they think about players and stuff. I don't think any team would want that. Like, when you sit there and hear about owners not wanting to be on Hard Knocks, off-season Hard Knocks, I would not want my team on that at all. That's a slippery slope. That is a tricky path to maneuver. But training camp Hard Knocks, I never thought there was much there in terms of why teams didn't want it to happen. I always thought it was a kind of a load of crap. Owners just didn't want to have to deal with the extra attention to their team. But, like, to me, I'll be honest, this Hard Knocks is no different than any other Hard Knocks. I don't think it's anything extra, anything more unique, anything better, other than the fact that I know all the coaches, I know all the players, and I'm more interested in it because of it. So I've enjoyed the first two episodes. I definitely thought the second episode built off the first episode and was better than the first episode. And I expect the upcoming episodes to build off episode two and get better and better. So I'm glad they're on it. I've said all along, back in the spring, that I think it would be great if the Bears were on Hard Knocks. And I'm glad they're on Hard Knocks, and I think it's going to be interesting. But, you know, some people are like, this is the best Hard Knocks ever. I think it's the best Hard Knocks ever because you're a Bears fan and the Chicago Bears are on it. I don't think it's anything additionally better than what the typical Hard Knocks have been over the last few years. All right, I've babbled enough, so let's get to Dan Durkin. Let's get his insight on this offseason so far, or preseason training camp. Forget the offseason. Preseason and training camp so far. This is Bill Zimmerman, Bears Banter. Dan Durkin joins me next. Be right back.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
American Giant makes great clothing. T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome into the podcast here. Excited for the guest portion of the podcast today. We are going to be joined by Dan Durkin. I'm sure you know him well from his years covering the Bears, Athletic, all over Chicago media. And he is joining the Windy City Gridiron team this year to bring his expertise to that fine website. And he joins me now. Dan, Bill Zimmerman, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Excited to have you aboard. And of course, it's at DJ Durkin on Twitter/X. If you're not following him, make sure you go do it there. But, you know, I was excited when Lester, our leader, let us know that you were joining the squad. So what are you going to be doing this year for Windy City Gridiron? What's kind of the course of action here?
Yeah, so, you know, I was thrilled when Lester reached out to me. I'd been, you know, just doing primarily radio the last year or so. So it's good to get back into a little bit of writing, which is fun. So I think that the initial conversations that Lester and I are having really kind of hovered around getting into the scheme and what's going on, which is what I love most about this, probably slicing in some data because I like to kind of marry up what I can observe with my eyes and then what I can see with data to kind of back that up. So interested to just bring like a different lens on the game, because I think that we get so caught up in storylines and some minutia that happens throughout the season. I like to zoom out and really kind of focus on the product and how it's going and, you know, basically how the Bears are attacking other teams, how other teams are attacking them, and, you know, trying to find little nuggets here and there that maybe people might overlook, or maybe people don't watch the all 22 after the fact. That's kind of the preferred way that I watch the games. So that's definitely what I'm hoping to bring to the mix this year.
All right. Well, absolutely. And it's a great year to have you aboard. Of course, the rookie season of Caleb Williams. Bears fans have been very excited about this for quite a while, although there was some infighting amongst fans for quite a while with the Justin Fields, Caleb Williams stuff. So let me, let's go back a little bit. Let me ask you, when did you start, like last during the football season, were you watching Caleb Williams college tape?
I was. And, I think that people over maybe blew out of proportion his game against Notre Dame. I know that there was I have some friends in the media circuit, and they were kind of going out there. Basically, I'm sure that there was a little bit of like, hey, let's push this narrative a little bit. But I was kind of pushing back on him. Like, they were like, oh, go back and watch the Notre Dame game. How can you take that guy with the number one pick? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, find me a single quarterback in the NFL who does not have some bad college football tape. Right. It's inevitable. Everybody's going to have a clunker. He didn't have a lot around him. So, let's just be real for a second. He was a one-man show last year. That was a very talent-poor team outside of Caleb. But you could see very quickly between the time at Oklahoma and the time at USC that this guy's just different in terms of the position just seems very natural to him. The way that I was talking to Mark Silverman about this weekend, we were kind of contrasting Justin and Caleb. And the way that I kind of framed it was, it just so happens that the Bears have a quarterback who happens to be a great athlete. Whereas with Justin, I think they had a great athlete that they were trying to make play quarterback. And so that's somewhat hard. You think about Justin and where he fell short in the NFL. I've fallen victim to this a couple times. So this is on me to get a little bit sharper around how I evaluate quarterbacks just at the collegiate level. When you think about, I liked DeShone Kizer when he was at Notre Dame. I mean, he was ridiculous. But then when you zoom out, he's playing behind five NFL, offensive linemen, and he's throwing the ball to two NFL wide receivers. So it's not dissimilar to Justin, where Justin played behind one of the best offensive lines in the league, and he threw to three number one picks, at wide receiver. So just an embarrassment of riches around him, and that kind of I think it was more of the cast carrying him rather than him carrying the cast. And it's the opposite with Caleb when I think about it. He is a guy who was a one-man show, throughout his time at USC, but still performed. I think that you look at just the ease with which he is able to go through his progressions, the footwork, the release, the arm strength is bananas. And I think that everybody got a chance to see that. You could see that in college too. He made some ridiculous throws at Oklahoma. He made a throw at Oklahoma that really kind of put him on my radar. I was like, what was that? It was one of those like off balance drifting to his left. So you think about it, your weight's going the opposite way, and he's able to kind of flick the ball back at opposite hash, other sideline. Those are throws that maybe, five or six people on the planet can make, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. It's a very small group of people that can move with that fluidity, flip their hips and get the ball to the opposite side. So those are NFL throws to me. And then when you think about what he showed against Buffalo, yes, it's the preseason. I get it. There's a lot of ands that come along with this, but you look at just the general operation of how he ran the offense. There's a lot of encouraging signs from him. You saw the silly, arm strength on the rollout that he hit with Cole Kmet. But yeah. I mean, people need to think about like this is how I look at it. There's some finer points too that you could I look at the mic point that he had in his first completion of the game. So what is he doing right there? He's making sure he's on the same page with his offensive line to say, hey, you need to block, that middle linebacker over to the right. That's where I want the protection go, because I'm kind of concerned about what this look is. That to me is a sign of a mature quarterback that's able to identify what he sees in the front and where he's a little uncomfortable. And is he in the same page with the center? So resetting the mic point, that's a mature type of thing. And then the biggest knock that I had on Justin was, I think, one of the most crucial things when it comes to quarterback play and high level quarterback play is eliminating who is not open earlier in the down. And so most quarterbacks can eliminate at least one, if not two, by the time they get to the top of their drop. So I'll go back to the third down play where they basically ran two seven stops. So it's like a corner route, and they both stop on the outside, and Keenan Allen's hooking up over the quarterback over the middle. So it's just basically they're all set up across where the sticks are to get the first down. His first reads Keenan over the middle. The safety squeezes over. He immediately comes off of Keenan and goes to DJ immediately. He didn't even think about it. It's just like, all right, he's not open. He's open. Here comes the ball. And so it's those types of things that you can't really teach. Those are like just instinctual quarterback. I understand where the ball is supposed to go, but if it's not there, I know where my second and my third read is. So really encouraging stuff. And I think that for Bears fans, it's going to be strange to see a quarterback. You know, it's just something that we really haven't seen. So I'm very energized by what Poles has done in a short period of time. And I think that the arrow is pointed, you know, straight up for this team when it comes to their ascension.
Yeah, I really agree with you on that. And you brought up Caleb Williams' ability to understand the offense, read a defense, and everything he was doing there. And that I agree. I see that as well. And that's really encouraging based on some of the issues of the last two high picks. And I'll include Mitch Trubisky in that, sure, with Justin Fields, where, and I remember Fields, I think it was a preseason game, maybe as a rookie against the Dolphins. I don't know if I have that right, because I didn't look it up, but, and then of course there was the Vikings game as well. And there were other ones as well, but these, where these blitzers would just come off the edge and Fields did not read it pre-snap and got himself drilled. And of course fans are going, oh, the offensive line's going to get him killed kind of thing. Like, actually that's on the quarterback. We know how well Mitch Trubisky could go against man and how well he struggled against zone, because the ideas of knowing and anticipating throws and where to hit the zone spots was too much of a challenge for him. But play Matt Patricia's, you know, man defense, and he's going to throw for 300 yards. So we've seen quarterbacks with some talent in whether it be, you know, Fields' athleticism, you know, Trubisky had some positive attributes as well, but they're not able to put it all together because of their shortcomings in those kind of the in between the ears stuff. And I'm not calling either of them dumb. I'm just saying in terms of understanding the football game and having to be able to do it at the speed you have to do it at, which is a very hard challenge. And only, you know, maybe a dozen and a half quarterbacks in the entire world can do it at the speed you need to do it at. And so far we're seeing Caleb Williams as a quarterback who does look like he will be able to do that.
Yeah, you're talking about processing, and that's so important as a quarterback. How quickly can you process where to go with the football in under 3 seconds? It's a very complicated when you think about that. You have to process a lot of information pre-snap, and then post-snap, the look that you got may not be the same. And so you saw that against the Bills. Kudos to the Bills for actually giving him some disguises, and that's good. That's great teach tape for him, and he actually came out with the right decision on some of those. The scramble that he had, they showed a single high look. They rolled back to two men. Now all of a sudden, he's getting middle field close indicator at the beginning of the snap. The ball snaps. The safety rotates, and now he's like, hey, this is two man. So two man is what Colin Kaepernick made, you know, really, really popular when they played the Packers. And all of a sudden, Colin Kaepernick's running for like 170 yards because they kept running the same coverage. It's the same type of thing. If you have everybody's backs turned and they don't have a spy on him, which the Bills didn't, he reads it. He's like, hey, nobody's going to be open. They're plastered on the outside. I'm just going to tuck the ball on the slide and get a first down. That's processing. That's understanding, hey, the pre-snap look that I got is not the same as post-snap. What's my adjustment right now? Well, I'm getting doubled here. There's nobody spying me. I'm going to pick up a first down and get a fresh set. So it's that type of how quickly can you adjust to the pre-snap and the post-snap picture and know where your team is going to be and know where they're going to adjust based on the coverage, you know, what coverage they actually get. That's what we're talking about. That's the differentiator between athletes at the quarterback position and quarterbacks at the quarterback position. Not all of the best quarterbacks in the league are premier athletes, but they're premier processors. And that's the big difference is, do you understand the call? Do you understand the route adjustments based on what the coverage actually ends up being? Where are you going with the football? All of this stuff looks relatively innate and instinctual for Caleb, which is good. A couple of things that I picked on just as nits from watching the game. Needs to get more comfortable operating from under center, you know, and so just like you can see some maybe not full extension on ball fakes, and I think that's just him getting used to like, hey, I'm accustomed to like, you know, looking down for the ball and then picking my eyes up. Now you're under center, so you sell that fake a little bit more. You know, it's gonna make the defense commit. Now all of a sudden, when you're breaking out of the pocket out of a rollout, you made them actually bite on that fake. They didn't bite on some of his play fakes. So those are the small things. The fact that he is where he's at right now, I think has to have Shane Waldron really excited about where this offense is going.
Yeah, it really, really should. And let me ask you about the rest of the offense. Let's start with the group of receivers. If you want to talk tight ends as well, we can do that, because, you know, I look at this group and I see a highly talented group. not just a highly talented group for this season. And we know Keenan Allen right now is just a 1 year here, you know, potentially for an extension. We'll see. But the fact that DJ Moore will be here for the entire length of Caleb Williams' rookie contract, even with the 5th year option, same goes for Roma Dunze, obviously same draft class. Cole Kmet's going to be here for 4 years. I mean, the core group of talented pass catchers, assuming Adunze does become a guy, and he certainly looks like he's headed in that direction. That's what I think is exciting, is the fact that you look at this, like I've never in, you know, I'm 45 years old covering this team and being a fan of this team growing up. I've never been at a point where I'm sitting here going, I don't know if they should pay Keenan Allen, because I don't know if I want that many resources committed to receiver when you already have DJ Moore and you already have Roma Dunze. Right. I've never been in a position to say they may have too much at receiver, but it's almost one of those things where they may have too many mouths to feed. And maybe someone like Gerald Everett, who's a quality receiver, may not get a lot of looks and things like that. So I think this pass catching group is special. I think when people talk about pass catching groups, you know, they go to the Matt Forte, Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, and Martellus Bennett is probably the best group this franchise has ever had. And I think there's the potential there that this group is better.
I don't disagree with that. And I do think that that's the probably the best instantiation of talent that the Bears have had since I'm a little bit older than you. And I've been watching this team for a very, very long time. This is the best skill group that they've had in terms of receivers. I think that they've had better backfields. I think Matt Forte is better than any back that they have right now. But when you talk about pass catchers and tight ends included in that group, this is the deepest group for sure. DJ being here for 6 years, Rome being here for 5 because of the first year, for the 5th year option being a first round pick, same with Caleb. That to me is like, you have built a core. And so now to your point, you don't need to chase Keenan Allen. If Keenan balls out and then he goes out, hey, he balled out in the year that and he did it while he was a Bear. And that means that the team's going to play well as a result of that. So I'm not going to get too caught up in those. But I'll say this. I guarantee you in a couple of years, the DJ Moore deal is going to look like a steal relative to what you're going to see some of these free agent deals, for wide receivers going out there. So, yeah. I mean, when you really think about the new money relative to where they were at with the existing contract that they inherited for 2 years, I think that this is going to look like a very valuable a contract for them. And he's a durable player. He, to me, is, no concern now. It was so interesting to me to hear his commentary on Hard Knocks after he signed it. Put yourself in the position of signing a $110 million contract and then walking out and just basically saying that, oh, that's a mood changer. He said it nonplussed. He was just like, oh, yeah, that's a mood changer. He's like, one less thing to worry about. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, man, I would not have that reaction if I had just, acquired what he did and earned what he did. So I think that's just a telltale sign of who he is. Now he can really focus. He doesn't have to worry about when's my next deal going to come. You have it. You have a chance that you might be able to sign one more before it's all said and done. So DJ, to me, when you think about his ability to beat man coverage, and then you think about Keenan and his ability to beat zone coverage, I'm very interested to see how Waldron deploys them. I assume they're going to be on opposite sides of the formation a lot for that very reason, because a lot of times what offensive coordinators will do is they'll build in a man beater on one side and a zone beater on the other side. And so how he's able to, because you don't know what the coverage is going to be. So I'm really interested to see how he deploys them just in formations. And then you throw Rome in there. Rome's raw. There's no doubt about it. You saw the play that I thought was, maybe a potentially bad throw, but it was the one that came back on the penalty. He got held the whole way through. So now he needs to understand, look, it's physical at the NFL. Brandon Marshall used to talk about that all the time. He's like, grab them before they grab you. You get a hold of their jersey and you move them where they need to go. So it's that little savvy that he's going to have to pick up to uncover himself when it comes to route running. But in terms of physical ability, he's got it all. You think about last year in that very explosive Washington offense, in situations where everybody in the stadium knew where the ball was going to go in third down and red zone, that it was going to go to Rome, and the fact that it did, he typically came down with it, speaks volumes about his ability just to, number one, win in contested situations, but just be the dude. And so now if you have him in a situation where you can't double cover everybody and he's getting single covered a lot, you could see that relationship mature over the course of the season. So I think by the end of the year, Rome's really going to kind of get going. I think he'll probably be a little bit slow out of the blocks, but then by the end of the season, he'll really rock. tight end wise, it's going to be interesting, like how this group comes together. I think Cole is, he's exceeded my expectations. I was actually worried about him for a while. I'm like, I'm not quite sure what this guy does, because, you know, he's not a very shifty, shall we say. He's not like the new breed, if you will, of tight ends, Brock Bowers, you know, Travis Kelce. Everybody's looking for those, you know, shifty guys that can uncover very quickly. He's not that guy. So I'm like, did they just spend like a top 50 pick on like an inline tight end? I was kind of like struggling with what he actually was going to be, but he showed some juice, you know, like down the stretch last year, and showed some juice in the first preseason game. So now you think about how much that opens things up in the playbook for like 12 personnel, which is, you know, one running back, two tight ends, two receivers. That's something Waldron ran a lot. He was very creative with his formations last year. I'm really interested to see what he deploys. He was so fascinating to watch last year with, you know, two very good receivers and Tyler Lockett and Metcalf, and then Jackson Smith and Digbo, kind of similar to what he has with the Bears, fit in here and there and really didn't really, you know, hit his stride fully. But how creative Shane was at giving defensive coordinators a look and then having variations off it each week. He ran this like almost like diamond shape in the backfield where he had a quarterback in the pistol, two tight ends behind him, and then the running back behind the quarterback. And he'd motion out of it. Sometimes he'd run like little like screen flares. I mean, so really creative. And I think he has better talents to work with now to actually install some of that. So I think that the shift you're going to see in motion and pre-snap motion and disguise and formations is going to be 180 degrees opposite of what you saw with Luke Getsy. And I'm sure that's music to most Bears fans' ears. So I think that the skill group that Caleb has to work with is very strong. My concern is the front five. That's where my biggest concern lies on this offense is continuity across the offensive line and really getting set with a center and getting set with the interior of the offensive line, just because you can't go through the season with as many musical chairs as the Bears have had the last couple of years. So they really, I think, need to lock in on that front five, you know, provided injuries are contributing to them not being able to do that. But that, to me, could be the undoing of this offense. So I'm interested to see how that comes together.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a little bit more about that offensive line, but a couple more on the skill positions. I want to ask you about the bottom of the receiver room, because obviously top heavy, it's great. Tyler Scott's the fourth wide receiver there. We know he had some hands issues as a rookie, but he did play a little bit better with the four games with Tyson Bagent, so maybe a different quarterback can unlock something there. But I still don't see him, unless Keenan Allen or someone gets hurt, I don't see him getting a lot of opportunities in the offense just because of where he is on the depth chart. But even beyond Tyler Scott, you know, the back end here with Velus Jones and Dante Pettis and DeAndre Carter and these guys, I'm curious how you see this like shake out, because even on Hard Knocks, you know, Caleb Williams says, hey, Colin Johnson is going to make the team, right? He's going to be on the team a while. And DJ Moore's like, well, how many receivers are we keeping? Like, even the Bears players aren't sure, because when I look at this, like, and we know now Velus is getting more time in the backfield as a running back. These last couple receiver spots, I'm really curious, get your opinion on how you think this shakes out, because I don't see a clear way to go. I see a lot of players that probably could get stashed safely on the practice squad if they wanted to. I don't know if Velus Jones would stick, I mean, with his speed and stuff, but I'm curious kind of how you see that shaking out. And is six receivers still going to be a thing with the new kickoff rule? I don't know. Maybe you want larger bodies and more linebackers and running back types. So I'm kind of curious what you think of the back end of this receiver room.
Yeah, I think Dante Pettis will not make the roster. You know, like I think that's an easy one that I think you can scratch that name off the list, or, you know, right off the bat. Carter and Velus Jones gets interesting, because Carter did play a little bit of has played some receiver throughout his career. He's never really been like a full-time guy. He's primarily been effective as a punt returner. Can Tyler Scott return punts? You know, because I think that it's going to be very interesting to see how he finds his way onto this roster. I think he's going to his avenue is going to be special teams, and that, you know, I really think he needs to learn how to play gunner on punt, because he's fast. Can you make your way through a double team out on the perimeter and get down and chase down a guy in a punt? And so, like, I think that what the decision is going to be for the bottom part is special teams. And so now Velus, if he can put together a couple more like he has at running back, it's going to be interesting, because now that running back room's getting really, does Travis Homer get squeezed out? Most likely, if Wheeler keeps playing this way. So these pieces kind of fit together when you think about how this puzzle is actually going to shake out in the end. And I think that
my money right now, given what Ryan, and I'm not saying he's doing this purely because of the draft capital that he used against it, but if Bayless continues to show the ability to not just be a perimeter runner, but also be an interior runner and, you know, a guy you can trust on some inside runs, that might bolster his, you know, like, you know, chances of making the roster significantly relative to Carter. So I think it really kind of comes down to those two. Colin Johnson strikes me as a hope you can stash him on the practice squad guy. Yeah. You know, that there's a lot to like in his archetype and his physical profile. You can't find many 6'6", 220 pound wide receivers out there with that type of, you know, like go up and get it ability and that type of like reach to be able to separate from a defensive back. But how mature is his route tree? What's his downfield blocking? Like, those are the things that they're going to look at to say, is this really a guy that we're going to keep? And then if you think about the tight end side of things as well, how many tight ends are there? All these things kind of figure into the mix. You have right. your wide receivers. How many are you going to take? Probably five is what my guess would be. And then the sixth would be a guy who could be a significant special teams contributor. So that's why Bayless makes sense to me because of his versatility. Let's face it, backs get banged up. DeAndre Swift does not have a track. I think he's missed at least a game in every, you know, one of his, he had a good year last year with the Eagles, but with the Lions. And I know that this is something just because I know people in that organization, he fell on Dan Campbell's bad side because he didn't realize the difference between being hurt and being injured. You know, there is a difference between those mm-hmm. two things. If you really think about it, you know, like, are you hurt or are you truly injured? And I think Dan Campbell thought that he chose not to play while he was hurt. And I know that that kind of made them, you know, look in a different direction. That's how they end up with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So he's going to miss time. Khalil Herbert's great. You know, I think Khalil Herbert's going to be a very significant contributor to this team as well. But it's like that third back now. If Bayless can kind of work himself into that mix and Wheeler can work himself in that mix, Wheeler strikes me as another guy you might want to stash on the practice squad as well. But I it's interesting what we're talking about right now. The Bears have young talent at skill position players that are going to make for some tough decisions on this roster, which is not a position that they've been in. They've been like picking from other teams' cuts to actually round out the roster the last few years. So the fact that now they're in a position to be kind of picky, if you will, about what their roster looks like, I think speaks to the talent. But if I had to guess, Pettis will not make the team. I think Colin Johnson's a great practice squad, you know, candidate if you were able to stash him. And then I think it really comes down to Bayless and Carter. And I think it's probably going to be Bayless just because of his versatility and the fact that they spent, what, the 72nd pick in the draft on him.
Yeah, and the injured versus hurt. The first time I heard that was the program with James Caan talking to Omar Epps in practice. Are you injured or are you hurt? And yeah, it's absolutely a thing in football.
It is.
So you brought up running back. So I want to ask you a little bit more about Khalil Herbert, because I think he's interesting, because even when you see him out there on preseason, like when he's, you know, he didn't bounce back well after that injury, the tail end of the season. He did not look like the same runner. But when he's on all cylinders, he is the best pure runner on this team in this group. I know maybe Swift is now, but at least compared to last year's group. So I do think there's a role for him here, but I also know Shane Waldron doesn't like to, you know, basically dictate plays based on personnel to defenses. And we know with Khalil Herbert, he's limited with blocking, he's limited with pass catching. So when he's in there, there's a good chance it's going to be a run. So is it possible Khalil Herbert loses his role on this team because of Shane Waldron not liking to you know, make plays predictive, and the fact that we're seeing Wheeler showing abilities, Vela showing abilities in the backfield? We know Swift and Roshan in the second year, they're not going to go anywhere, but the like you said, Homer could get squeezed out. There's a lot of talent here, and I'm curious how this plays out, even with Herbert.
Yeah, I'm a big Herbert
supporter. I think he's good. I do agree with you. The first few weeks he came back, it looked rough after that ankle injury. It was gross. Like, if you actually watch that it does not, I don't know how he even tried to come back later on in that game the way that he did. But you know, that's somebody who's willing to play hurt. Let's just put it that way. He did have some good games down the stretch, though. When they were given the ball, I think he had like an 18 for 100. He had a couple 100-yard games down the stretch where it's like, hey, if you feed this guy, he's actually pretty good. But your point around like being, you know, kind of predictive with the sets, let's contrast it to what they had last year with Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker Jr. It's not too dissimilar to what we're talking about right now. You know, Kenneth Walker is a home run guy. He is a threat to, just like DeAndre Swift is a home run guy. A lot of juice, get him out in the boundary, one cut, and he gets upfield. You saw what he did on the screen. You saw behind that Eagles offensive line at the beginning of the year, he was running as well as he's run in his professional career. And then Charbonnet was more of like the bruiser, bully type guy. He found, you know, a way to make it work between the two of them. I don't see a scenario where Velus or Wheeler would show enough to supplant, you know, Khalil. Khalil just has too much NFL proof that he's a good running back for them to say, oh, this guy Wheeler might. I'm like, I don't see it that way. So Khalil to me is, I think he's underappreciated by people outside of Chicago. Definitely good vision, one cut, get it up the field, can be aggressive in between the tackles, but also has a little bit of juice as well. So I think he and Swift are easy, the 1-2 from my perspective. It just gets really interesting after that when it comes to Velus, Homer, and then Wheeler. This Wheeler kid, he's got some juice. He's fast, like fast. Like they said in Hard Knocks last night, that he is fast. And so you think about that. Can he play special teams now? That's what we have to keep asking when we're talking right about like numbers 50, you know, 47 through 53. Can they play special teams? And that's really what it's going to come down to. So can he show a little bit in that to earn a spot on the roster? At the very least, I think he's earned, the consideration for practice squad. And if he has a couple more performances like he had last week, who knows?
All right, let me ask you about the offensive line, then I'll get one in on the defense before I let you go. Because like you said, offensive line, there's question marks there. Obviously, you don't want to have as many question marks as they do. I think a lot of the question marks, you know, there's kind of a pivot point there with Nate Davis and the lack of availability he's had. And look, it's tough when you're sitting there commenting on guys that are sitting out with injuries, and we don't know what Nate Davis's injury has been. But we've also heard from Matt Eberflus kind of say, oh, yeah, you can lose your job due to an injury and things like that. So you're kind of getting the feeling that maybe the coaching staff, Ryan Poles, maybe getting a little frustrated with Nate Davis's lack of availability. And maybe that comes back down to, are you injured or are you hurt? And that kind of thing with Nate Davis as well. I heard that there were some issues with Vrabel in Tennessee with him in terms of practicing and being available. So when we look at this offensive line and you know, a center and a quarterback need to have a good rapport, and we're getting to the point of the summer here that Caleb Williams needs to have a pretty consistent center here as a rookie. It seems like, I know Bates is banged up a little bit right now, but it seems like maybe it's going towards Shelton right now, and then maybe Bates and Davis are going to compete at right guard. But yeah, I mean, Tevin Jenkins is always a chance he's going to be injured, but when he's healthy, he's great. We know who the tackles are going to be. Hopefully they stay healthy as well. I know Wright's been a little banged up here in the preseason as well, but let me ask you more about this kind of interior line and how you think Chris Morgan and Matt Eberflus should approach this moving forward.
Yeah, I think that their preferred front five would be Bates at center, and then you have Davis at right guard, Tevin at left, obviously Braxton at left, and then Darnell at right. That would be their preferred.
I agree with that.
Don't know enough about the Bates injury to opine on how long it's going to be until he's back in the mix. But to your point, like, cadence and, you know, just that you're talking about a guy who snaps with his left hand. It sounds crazy, but this is true. This is a guy who didn't operate a lot under center in college. These things matter. And so you have to kind of start to solidify. I think in the next week or so, they're really going to have to make a decision or be a little bit more declarative about like the length of time that they don't, you know how this works. They're not going to disclose specifics to anybody about exactly, you know, like how severe some of these injuries are. And it doesn't sound like it's like catastrophic with Bates, but that, you know, they're very mysterious when it comes to those types of things. And I'm not sure how much clarity we're going to get, but in terms of solidifying that front five, it is very important for them to get down to who are the pieces at center and right guard. I think that's where the decisions really come down to. I love Tevin Jenkins. I think he's phenomenal. And I think that there were times last year where, like, he was playing, like, maybe one of the 10 best guards in the league when you think about just, like, you know, playing to the echo of the whistle and just nasty and, you know, bringing that element of toughness that this offensive line needs. The first, where Caleb scrambled, his first throw of the game where he threw it away, a guy kind of took a shot at Caleb on the sideline. The first dude running, like sprinting over there with his Tevin, he got right in his grill. That's what you want, and that's what you want. You want guys out there that are letting them know, like, that's not going to fly here. He's a tone setter for the team, and that's the type of stuff that earns you trust, you know, amongst the four guys that you're lining up next to, and definitely your quarterback. So I think they have the pieces to put together a pretty decent offensive line here. I do worry about the tackle depth, though. I'm not going to lie. And so, like, now you get yourself in a situation where if they do have a problem at tackle, Tevin slips out to, you know, left or right, depending on where it is. Now your guard shuffles. Like, I don't know if Ryan has fully solidified the offensive line the way that he's wanted to. So I would assume that that's going to be an area that he's going to attack next year. I think he really wants to be firm on who his left tackle is going to be, you know, in 2025 and beyond. That's one area that I think they're going to have to look at. But I think if they had their druthers, it would be Bates at center, you know, Nate Gabes at guard. And then obviously the rest of the three are pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's wrap up with a defensive question. They're obviously offense a lot more interesting than defense right now. The secondary has certainly given Caleb some fits at times in practice, which is great. You love to see that, because that's supposed that. That should be a top five secondary in the league if they're healthy and playing as well as they can.
Totally agree.
Yeah, you know, secondary linebacker group is very good. I'm not as big of a Tremaine Edmonds fan as other people, but no need to get into that. No, more so I want to get into the front four here, because that's obviously the biggest question mark here. Matthew Judon just gets traded to Atlanta. I know a lot of Bears fans were maybe hopeful there, but obviously that's not going to happen. Austin Booker looked pretty good there against Buffalo, but, you know, fifth round pick, how much can you get there? DeMarcus Walker, solid, but doesn't provide much of a pass rush from the outside. So, well, you know, I know Eberflus can try and get creative with some stunts and twists and maybe doing some blitzing here, but right now with the defensive front four, the way it looks, I think they're going to struggle to get a pass rush with four, and they may have to get creative.
Yeah, you know, they're going to have to find that piece that's going to so let's just step back for a second. Montez Sweat is going to dictate the protection scheme
of every team the Bears play this year. The help is always going to slide his way. And so when that's the case, depending on, are you giving guard help? Are you bringing a tight end? You know, like, are you just full sliding to his side? So these are the decisions that offensive coordinator and offensive line coaches need to make. But the benefit of doing that is that creates singles on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage. And so who is going to step up opposite him to take advantage of those single block opportunities is going to really kind of determine the success of this defense. I have been to training camp a couple times. I have been watching the defensive line group very closely, and they are twisting and stunting with that group all the time. And so that, what I'm getting at by saying that is I think you're going to see them run a lot of games and stunts up front to do exactly what you're saying. Try and confuse the blocking scheme with twists and stunts. How good are they at communicating? How good are they at passing guys off, you know, when a twist happens, to free up and try and create a little bit of pass rush that way? Because
I said it, you know, while you were talking there, I think the secondary is fantastic.
I truly believe that the secondary could become one of the best in the league. And I'm going to put a stamp on it. I think Kyler Gordon could be one of the four or five best nickel corners in the league this year. And he right certainly will be one of the best in the night. He is outstanding. And so what that does for you in terms of how you fit the run and his ability to defend a two-way goal from the slot frees up a lot in terms of how you use your safeties behind it. It means a lot to the defense. So the fact that they have that piece there is great. And then if you're trusting Tyreek and Jalen to single up on the outside, you can get all types of creativity with the interior people between your linebackers and your safeties and your nickel corner. So I think Kyler is going to fit in very significantly in the blitz scheme here. I think they're going to see them use, they used him some last year. I think he's going to be inserted a lot on blitz this year. And then you bring a safety down to take care of the void where that he left. So you kind of exchange responsibilities there. So I think Kyler is going to be a really big piece to this, but Jervon Dexter is going to be, you know, a really crucial piece for this to work. If he can get any type of push on the interior, which I think he can. He's slimmed down significantly, looks to be in great shape. Dominique Robinson looks like, people are talking about Booker for all the right reasons. This kid, he's flashed a lot in the first two games. Dominique Robinson played really well against the Bills. He played well against the run, and yet he played well against the pass as well. So they have some younger guys that are actually kind of stepping up here, and that's what they really need.
Booker, to me, is very interesting, just in terms of very, very high motor. Guy is relentless, and he uses that long arm technique to his advantage to either pull a guy through or, you know, to spin off of him.
So they may have found something in him, and he's going to be a strong situational pass rusher for him.
Can he be as responsible, you know, against the run? Can he recognize blitz? You know, can he recognize blocks as they come up to him? So
I think that they have some young pieces, but
I do agree that my biggest concerns with this team are the trenches
on both sides, which, you know, it's hard to get too optimistic about a team when you do have questions in the trenches like you do for the Bears. That's not to say they can't be a good team, because I think they will be a good team this year. But there's a lot of ifs that we've had in this conversation that lead me to believe that if the defensive line is not able to generate pressure outside of Sweat, that secondary could be exposed, just because now you're asking them to be, you know, covering for 4, 5, 6 seconds, which is a, you know, impossible task for any cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. So there he is, Dan Durkin at DJ Durkin on Twitter/X. And you're going to be able to read him all season long in Windy City Gridiron. Very excited he's part of the team. Dan, thanks for so much time. Really appreciate it. Yeah. And we'll be reading you all season.
Thanks for having me.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, there he is, Dan Durkin, everybody. I thought that was a great spot. I thought Dan gave some really unique insight and some great analysis there. Excited that he's aboard here and what he's going to be providing for Windy City Gridiron all season long. So that should be great. I am looking forward to it. I hope you enjoyed that spot with Dan as well. Let's wrap up. Let's wrap up with a few questions. Don't have a ton to get to, but I do want to get in a few mailbag questions here before we wrap up. How about this? Let's go to Bob Bear. What do you hear was the Bears' offer for Judon? All right, well, let's talk about this. And I'll be honest, I don't know specifically what the Bears may or may have offered. I don't know if the Bears ever made an official offer for Judon. I am confident in saying the Bears had interest in Judon. I don't think the Bears would even have flirted with third round for Matthew Judon at this point. I do not think they got Sweat for a second round. You're only going to go back about 25, 30 spots for Matthew Judon, who's like 6 years older. Nah, forget it. Like, absolutely not. So when I look at the Bears here and this, you know, I think what the Bears probably did, when you look at what draft capital they have available, I am confident that they would not be giving up a 3 for a 32-year-old edge. Confident that they would not have given up a 3. So if the Falcons moved to a 3, that was it, signed, sealed, delivered. That's how that gets done. But then you look at it and go, well, the Bears don't have a 4. The 4 was part of the Austin Booker, Ryan Bates trade with Buffalo. So they don't have a 4. So now you sit there and say they got 5s and 6s, and you know they've got plenty there on day 3 in the back part of day 3. They probably offered a 5 for Matthew Judon and were probably willing to give Matthew Judon some new money. So when I look at it like that, that makes a lot of sense to me. That makes a lot of sense. A 5th-round pick for a 32-year-old edge, that makes sense. That's something I could have seen happen. But in terms of, you know, a 5th-round pick and then maybe another day 3 pick in 2026, I could see something like that. Maybe you get 2 day 3 picks, you know, to try and sweeten the pot a little. But in terms of the Falcons were willing to offer a 3 I do not think the Bears were close to that offer. Again, that is a guess. That is not inside information in terms of what the Bears may or may not have offered, but I do not think they would have gone anywhere near a third round pick. Adam Davis, what do you see as the biggest camp battle specifically shaking out? And does the rookie Wheeler have a legitimate shot to supplant Velus Jones and grab his roster spot? Well, Adam, we'll go over this a little bit here, but I don't want to spend too much time on it because, you know, if you've listened to this whole podcast, we definitely got to a lot of this kind of throughout. And in terms of training camp battles, you know, you're looking at offensive line. You're looking at someone like Ja'Tyre Carter. Can he make the 53-man roster? And again, this is so much dependent on so many other things. We're talking about Ja'Tyre Carter potentially as the ninth offensive lineman, Karan Amagaji as well as a potential, you know, ninth offensive lineman. Amagaji's on the 53 or on the IR. He's not part of a camp battle as a rookie. But what happens to Amagaji is going to potentially open up a spot for someone like Carter, who may not even be in a training camp battle if Amagaji starts on the 53. But if he's on IR, then suddenly that ninth offensive lineman spot could be in the mix if the Bears do decide to keep nine guys on the 53. I think Brett Rypien has looked outstanding so far in preseason. He definitely can execute Shane Waldron's offense. Is Brett Rypien and Tyson Bagent potentially a battle for QB2? I think that's interesting to see how that shakes out. You brought up Zach Wheeler. You know, I mentioned it. We talked about it with Dan Durkin there a little bit. Zach Wheeler, to me, feels like a guy who's got some juice, has some potential, but can you be safe with him on your practice squad this season with a potential injury? And in terms of that roster battle, you're talking about a training camp battle between running backs and receivers to try and secure the last one or two spots on the 53-man roster on offense. So this is not Zach Wheeler versus Velus Jones. This is Zach Wheeler versus Travis Homer versus Khalil Herbert versus Velus Jones versus Dante Pettis versus DeAndre Carter versus Colin Johnson and like two roster spots or three roster spots available to all of them, as we went over before. Tight end. Are they just going to keep three tight ends? Or is Kari Blasingame and Steven Carlson, in essence, battling for a roster spot, whether they keep four tight ends or they keep a true fullback? So I think you have to look at that there. And then in terms of the defensive side of the ball, unless you're really curious about Greg Stroman and Jalen Jones and all those type of guys, or, you know, can Micah Baskerville, after a nice play, can he make the 53? If you're talking about that, but then the focus really is up front on that defensive line. Jervon Dexter, Zach Pickens, you know, can Keith Randolph get himself in the mix there? Who is going to emerge at edge? Can Jacob Martin be a solid rotational player? So in terms of the camp battles, you've got a lot of things trying to shake out there. Kick returner, I think they're trying to play it really close to the vest. They don't want to give up too much in terms of what they're going to do at kick returner so far. So, and not just the Bears, I think every team is like that. But who is going to, you know, two kick returners have to be deep. Who's going to be deep along with Velus Jones there? There's a lot of questions mark here. So in terms of training camp battles, I don't think there's a lot of specific who's winning between this player and that player. You know, like you could make an argument for Rypien and Bagent, but I think a lot of things, it's let's look at a group and know we're going to keep two roster spots out of four. Because what we've got here, for the first time in a while, we've got legitimate depth here, Adam. We've got legitimate depth where you just usually would just sign up guys and sit there and go, you got 51 guys because you don't have enough for a 53. So I guess this guy and this guy make the team. Well, now the Bears have 56 or 57 guys that you can look at and go, these guys are worthy of 53-man roster spots, and there's not enough spots for them. So they're going to have to be creative in terms of who goes to the practice squad. And, you know, in terms of, you know, is someone going to go on IR? They may be creative in terms of how to protect as many guys as possible when the first cuts are made in September. So the Bears have two preseason games to go. Caleb Williams, as long as he plays, you know, with rain, and I guess the Bengals aren't going to be playing any of their starters, we'll see. But if Caleb Williams plays his Soldier Field debut, and then, of course, one more preseason game before the Bears kick off the season against the Titans in less than a month. We are less than a month away from football that matters, and I can't wait. We will definitely be back. We're not going to be back next week. I'm going to be out of town again. We will be back the last week of August. We will also be doing our big, you know, regular season preview with Aaron Lemming that we do every year, so make sure you look for that. But yeah, plenty of Bears Banter content. So basically, you've got the Dan Durkin podcast here, off next week, and then after that, we're going to be hitting weekly podcasts starting that last week of August all the way through the Bears season, whenever it ends. Hopefully it ends deep into January, February. That would be a nice change of pace. As Dan says, looks like, you know, there's actually something to build on here. It looks like it's going to be a fun team to watch. So bear down, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Adios.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.